Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. Today, we've got another rendition of Hey Chris, where we answer questions from our subscribers on Subtext. And joining me to give you all the insight is none other than the man himself, Chris Fedor. What up, Chris?
What's going on, Ethan? How are you, man?
I'm doing all right. How are you enjoying Utah?
It's been fine. It's been warmer than I anticipated when coming here. It's been right in the low 50s, maybe the upper 40s, which I'll take. The last time I was in Utah, when it wasn't January, because most of the times that the Cavs come to Utah, it's in January. I think the last time was Summer League a number of years ago, and we were here in July or August or something like that, and it was gorgeous, right? So for us to be here in April and not have to deal with the snow and the freezing cold and be able to walk downtown without a winter jacket on, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my night walking around the city staring at the mountains because we don't get those here in Cleveland.
Yeah, for sure. And Chris, I know we got a lot of questions to get into today regarding the Cavs, but I wanted to start with this one from Matt in Los Angeles, who asks, what are your top three favorite NBA cities to visit and why, besides good hotel toothbrushes? I thought that was hilarious.
So it's so hard to make a top three, right? Because you're always going to go to the major cities. And I'm going to go to the major cities just like everybody else does. So it's New York. New York is my favorite city in the world, at least the ones that I've visited. I haven't been to Paris. I haven't been to Ireland. I haven't been to, you know, Greece or Australia or any of those places.
We need to get you out the country more, man.
Hey, man, I go to Toronto. I go to Canada.
That barely counts.
I've been to Mexico.
Okay, I'll give that to you.
I've been to Antigua.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Exotic, right? But when it comes to covering the beat, I think my favorite is New York. Los Angeles is certainly in the top three. And Toronto is up there too. And I feel bad because I'm leaving off Miami. And everybody knows how much I love Miami. And I love being on the beach. And I love the water. But it's like making an MVP list, right? You have to leave somebody out of your top five. It sucks to do it. It's a great player that's not making your top five, but there are only five spots on your MVP ballot. In this question, there are only three spots on my top cities to visit around the NBA, and not everybody can make it. So I'll say New York, Los Angeles, and Toronto.
Look at you boiling down your list. I'm proud of you. That's progress. But Chris, now time to get into the big boy business with these subtext questions about the Cavs. And the first one comes from Stefan in Parma. So a little local question. And he says, why do you think Darius Garland has had such an uneven year? Is it just injuries or something more? Do you think he can still become the franchise cornerstone that the team thought they were getting when they awarded him a max contract? And I'm just going to start this one off, Chris. When you think about Darius Garland and what he has endured since he's entered the NBA, a lot of facial injuries, a lot of injuries, period. That not only affects your psyche, but it also affects how you're going to approach the game. And the second thing on that is that Donovan Mitchell obviously is going to have the ball in his hands a majority of the time. And the difference for this season has been for when Darius Garland has been the head of the snake when Donovan Mitchell is not in the game or injured or something like that. And that's when I've been interested to see what response Darius would give us. And it's been back and forth. There have been games where Darius has shown promise, and there have been games where he's just been downright terrible. And I'm not gonna lie, I know he got a max contract. I know he got the biggest contract in franchise history. But do you really think he's this franchise's cornerstone?
No, but he's a core member of this team. Yes. He's one of the guys that they've chosen to build around. He's one of the guys that they consider part of the core four. It's Darius, it's Donovan, it's Jared Allen, it's Evan Mobley. Those are the guys that have built the foundation of this organization, and it's about trying to find the other pieces around those guys to fit. And if we're being honest, if we're being fair, Darius hasn't played like a foundational piece. He hasn't had the kind of season that he would want. He hasn't had the kind of season that the Cavs would want or the Cavs were expecting of him. He has struggled for a variety of reasons. I think part of it is the fact that he had a broken jaw. I think part of it is the fact that he was dealing with other nagging injuries at the beginning of the season. I think part of it is a human element. His grandmother passed away. I think part of it is when you're in and out, it's hard to get into a consistent rhythm. It's hard to find your place. And I also wonder, I don't know this, so I'm not reporting this. I want to make that clear, and I don't want people to aggregate this. It's just me thinking out loud. It's something that I've wondered about. I wonder if it was a hit to either Darius's ego or his confidence that the best stretch of basketball that this team played coincided with him being out. And it was really, really hard on him to sit there and watch, to not be able to play, to have to battle through all of the things that come through a significant injury. And I just wonder if that shook him just a little bit, or if it did shake him at all. Beyond that, I think Darius is kind of, in some ways, Ethan, I think he's going to be an inconsistent offensive force for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, he does have a high turnover rate. He does at times make nonchalant passes. There is a level of basketball maturity that Donovan Mitchell has, that Caris LeVert has, that Darius Garland just doesn't at this stage of his career, at this stage of his development. He still is a young player. He still is a young kid. He needs to learn some things. He needs to listen to some of these veterans that are around him, like Tristan Thompson and Max Strus and George Niang and Donovan Mitchell, so that he can have a better understanding of what it takes to take that next step, so that he can see firsthand what it takes to take that next step. But stylistically, when it comes to his game, so much of it is three-pointers and the in-between stuff, right? He has a hard time finishing through contact. He doesn't always draw fouls at the rim, so it's not like he gets a ton of easy points at the basket. He's more of like a floor general than he is a natural scorer. He's more of a three-point shooter. That's probably like the best area for him to consistently score the basketball. And that's been a little bit off for him. His percentages are down a little bit. So I do think there are a number of different factors that have tied into the season that Darius has had to this point. In saying that, there have also been flashes. There have been moments at various points throughout the season where you see the Darius of old, you see the all-star level Darius. And just like in the NBA, that we've talked about teams taking a step from going from good to great and how difficult that is and how some teams never do make that step and it's not a guarantee that they do make that step. Going from a good to great player in the NBA, consistently great player, is not an easy step to make. And I think we're seeing that with Darius.
Yeah, I mean, we know what the ceiling is and the potential is for Darius, but there's a lot of things that he needs to work out internally and obviously with the Cavaliers to get those things figured out. And with time kind of running out this season and even potentially with Donovan Mitchell and his contract, it's looking more and more focused on how he can make those changes, not only to end the season, but also adapting in the playoffs and what kind of player we get from Darius in the postseason. But Alec from Chicago had a two-part question, and I wanted to stick with the theme of Darius Garland for this first part of the podcast. So the second part of his question was, if Darius keeps underperforming, do you think he could get benched?
So here's the problem, right? We have these conversations, they're grandiose conversations, and the easy response is always take the guy's minutes away, trade the guy around the time of the trade deadline, or trade him this offseason, or don't allow him to play as many minutes, or take his starting job away. So if you want to take the starting job away from Darius Garland, who are you putting in the starting lineup in his place? And what are you gaining by doing that?
Yeah, I think the question is, are you asking if he gets benched from the starting lineup? I say automatically no, but I think we've seen J.B. Bickerstaff has gone in the direction of, if he understands that any player, not just talking about Darius Garland, is not playing up to their potential and they need a change, he right. is willing to make that change during a game. And I know a lot of people have hated on J.B. Bickerstaff this season and what he hasn't done and the things that people expect him to do to make changes and help them win. And I think that's a whole different conversation, to be honest. Yep. But we have seen JB make the decisions to take Darius Garland, to take Donovan Mitchell out of games when they're not performing to the level that they are expected to.
Right.
So could he get benched? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, there could be a situation where Darius doesn't close games. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Darius being taken out of closing games could be an even more in-depth question because of what we've seen as of late.
Here's the other thing. I don't want people to get carried away with these hot takes in a situation where the Cavs are playing their worst basketball of the season. They had a terrible March. They went 7-10. Six of their losses were by double digits. So we all understand that they went through a bad stretch. And a lot of guys during that stretch played bad basketball. Darius Garland included. Okay? But Darius is second on the team in scoring. He leads the team in assists. It's not like he is a consistent negative out there every single time he's on the floor. We all admit he hasn't been up to standard. We all admit that he hasn't played like a foundational member of this team or what you would expect consistently from a foundational member of this team. But it doesn't mean that he's playing to a level that he should be benched. Like, come on. That's going a little bit overboard here. He was bad the other night against Denver. He's been bad at various points since coming back from the fractured jaw. But I think part of the criticism attached to Darius, and this is what comes with it, right? Big power comes big responsibility. Is that the phrase? Heavy is the head that wears the crown? Something like that. When you're making the kind of money that Darius is making, when you have that kind of status, when you have an all-star attached to your resume, more is going to be expected of you. That just comes with it. It comes with being a franchise player. It comes with being a member of the core four. So I think part of the criticism, or a lot of the criticism, that comes the way of Darius is attached to those things. But like, he hasn't had a disastrous season. He really hasn't. Not to the point where we have to have these conversations about him getting benched or anything along those lines, especially going into the playoffs here. In saying all that, he's got to be better. I think Darius would admit that he's got to be better, and I think everybody inside the organization would admit he needs to be more consistent for this team to reach the level that it wants to reach. And he needs to play with a little bit more maturity and a little bit more seriousness and less flair and nonchalance. Because sometimes I think he gets caught up in that, and I think that leads to some of his decision-making, and that leads to some of his mistakes.
I agree, and I think Darius's fun and enjoyment of the game and how he's able to create and his dribbling is not necessarily always a bad thing. It just has a time and a place, as most things do. But I want to move on to the next question. We got two more before we take a break, Chris. The next one is, what is this Cavs team doing in order to best prepare themselves for the playoffs and not get bounced out in the first round in embarrassing fashion? I understand that health is a priority, but is there something they are doing to prepare?
I think their preparation is everything that has transpired throughout the course of this season, both in the good and the bad. How do they respond in uncomfortable situations? Because the playoffs are going to be uncomfortable. The playoffs are going to test this team physically and mentally. So going through some of the adversity that they've gone through during this season, going through some of the in-game adversity in late-game situations, all of that stuff could, emphasis on could, benefit the Cavs moving forward. The regular season has also been in part about what works, what doesn't work. What kinds of things can we go to in late game situations in terms of sets, in terms of play calls? What is our best style for a matchup against a small ball team? What is our best style for a matchup against a team that wants to play bigger? What is our best matchup for a team that is going to go into zone as opposed to man-to-man? All of those things, the only way for a team to learn those things and have a better understanding of those things is to experience them. And the Cavs have used the regular season to experience those things. And sometimes you succeed through that, and sometimes you fail through that. But I think they've learned a lot about themselves. I think they have more answers than what they did at the beginning of the season because of the reps, because of the meaningful situations that they've been placed into. I think JB has more trust in some guys at the back end of his bench that maybe he wouldn't trust as much if they didn't go through as many injuries as they went through in the regular season. If all of those guys weren't out simultaneously, would JB have ever gone consistently to Sam Merrill and figured out the kind of weapon that he can be for this offense? Now, when the Cavs get into a situation in a 7-game series against whoever it may be in the first round of the playoffs, he knows he can go to Sam, and he knows what Sam is capable of, and he knows what kinds of play calls are going to suit his game, and with him on the floor, what kind of style the Cavs are going to use. And like, all of that information has been gathered during meaningful games, even if the result hasn't been exactly what the Cavs have wanted it to be. So the regular season, in large part, Ethan, to me, is about experimentation, and it's about preparation for what's ahead. And maybe the Cavs are going to be ready for that, and maybe they're going to handle it better than they did last year in the first round against the Knicks, or maybe they're going to fail again. We just have to wait and see.
Yeah, and I think this also ties into the injuries that the Cavs are facing right now, because they don't know who they're going to get back before the playoffs start and who they might get back during the playoffs. So being able to put these rotations and lineups together now gives them the preparation and the knowledge of who can do what in certain situations with who they have right now. And the other thing is Donovan Mitchell. We know that he is on the record saying that he's healthy, but by his play and by his facial expressions in the locker room and his performances have indicated that he is not at his 100% best. And even he said that he needs to be better. So him learning how to play on that knee at whatever percentage it's at right now is going to benefit him and the team, because they'll understand what he's able to do in different situations, and potentially if they have to go away from him in certain situations as well. So I think that's the biggest thing, is learning who you're going to have, what they're capable of doing, and what level or what capacity they're going to be able to play at for the playoffs.
I also think, Ethan, the biggest potential change that we could see going into this year's playoffs is the separation of Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. I think there's enough data right now that continues to point to a 1-in-4-out type lineup being extremely effective for the Cavs. And because Evan Mobley missed as much time as he did throughout the course of the season, and because the Cavs made the additions that they made this past offseason and during the season with Marcus Morris Sr., they have more potential options to go to the four-shooter lineup. And I think the Cavs saw the potential effectiveness of that. If you think about the other night against Philadelphia, the game that the Cavs won most recently, late in the game, Jared Allen was not on the court. Evan Mobley was out there, and George Niang was out there. Now, Niang was having a great game. He earned it based on the way that he was playing, but that is the kind of thing that the Cavs didn't do a lot of last year, because I just don't think there was enough comfort from the coaching staff and within the organization about, okay, if we split up Jarrett and Evan through long stretches of a game, like, are we actually going to benefit from that? I think that's the question that they were asking last year, and I think they came to the conclusion that, yeah, we might not have as much firepower on the offensive end of the floor, but defensively we are great with both of them out there, and we can't replicate what we would be losing defensively if we take one of those guys off the floor. Because of the way that the Cavs played while Evan was injured, with Jared as the lone big, and because they have other shooters that they can go to at the power forward spot, and because Jarrett and Evan together hasn't been as effective defensively as past seasons, and it certainly has shown its flaws again on the offensive end of the floor. I think that's something that the coaching staff will be more comfortable doing in whatever upcoming series, if the matchup dictates going that direction.
For sure. Last question before we get into the break. When talking to the team, do they feel like they will rally around the adversity post-All-Star break and have a unified us-versus-the-world-prove mentality? Or does it appear more likely to break them in their spirits because it feels like it is heading towards the latter, unfortunately? To be very frank, this team has rallied around each other on multiple occasions. From the very beginning of the season, when they had Jared Allen out, to when Evan Mobley and Darius Garland were out, to when Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell, Dean Wade, all of these guys have been out. They have had one of the most adverse seasons of any team in the NBA this year. And each time they've been hit with something, it felt like they have been able to kick back. Certainly, right now, in this season, at the end of the year, after their terrible March stretch, they may seem a little more down, but the thing with this group is every new day is a new opportunity. And I think that's what J.U. Bickerstaff has been able to talk to us about on multiple occasions. He says that when he walks into the locker room, when he walks into the team, that he and the coaching staff need to set the precedent that they have a good attitude because they play their best ball when they're having fun, playing with joy and playing together. And that is something that this team cannot lose going into this latter half of the season and going into the playoffs. So do I think that they're taking a us versus the world mentality? Maybe not, but I think it's a more focus on let's do everything that we can do together and then everything else will work itself out.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think given everything that the Cavs have been through throughout the course of this season, for them to be still third place in the Eastern Conference with 45 wins, it speaks volumes about their togetherness. It speaks volumes about their belief in one another. It speaks volumes about their commitment to one another. And just because they're going through a bad stretch, and they are going through a bad stretch, and just because they're not in a great state as a basketball team, just given the way that they're playing right now, offensively, they're not very good. Defensively, they're not very good. They're losing these games in non-competitive ways in some of them. But just because they're going through this stretch right now, it doesn't mean that it's going to carry over into the end of the season. It doesn't mean that it's going to carry over into the playoffs. The playoffs are completely different than the regular season. Last year, we saw the Denver Nuggets lose 4 games in March. They went on a 4-game losing streak in March, and some of those were just baffling losses, right? It didn't mean that they couldn't go on to win the championship, because they did go on to win the championship. The Miami Heat did not have the best March of any team in the NBA, and yet they still represented the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals. So these things can turn around quickly. It's a long season. It's a grind. Teams go through good stretches. Teams go through bad stretches. We just had the Denver Nuggets, one of the best teams in the NBA, lose back-to-back games at home for the first time all season. And then they came out and they blew the doors off the Cavs, because what happened 2 days before and 4 days before doesn't really matter when you get to a new day. So that's just life in the NBA. And I know it can be emotional, and I know that it can be a roller coaster for a lot of fans, but this isn't the NFL. Right, there are 82 of these games, not 17. Not every single loss is some statement about where the team is. Not every losing streak is a team's true identity. Not every bad stretch is representative of who a team is and what they're going to be when the playoffs roll around. I think everybody inside the organization would admit that the Cavs need to play better. They need to figure things out. They need to find some things that feel like they've been lost during this recent stretch. But that doesn't mean that they can't go into a first-round series against the Magic or the Indiana Pacers and be competitive just because they were crappy in March.
All right, Chris. Now that we've gone through some subtext questions, I think it's time for a break. But when we come back, we're going to get into more questions from subtexters with a focus on the upper management and what could go on with some contracts this upcoming summer. But before then, become a Cavs insider and interact with me and Chris by subscribing to Subtext. This is how you can get insider information on anything going on in the locker room, what we're hearing from outside sources, and things of that nature. To get this information, you can sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from Chris and me. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Chris, these are some heavy hitter questions about things going on in upper management and what some fans want to know about how this season could impact what goes on in the offseason. So, first one from Andy in North Olmsted says, is it possible that Kobe Altman's job may be in jeopardy if things don't go well in the playoffs? He has been the architect for the past 7 years, and we appear to have very little salary cap flexibility and an empty war chest in terms of draft picks moving forward.
Okay, those things are true. There are some things that the Cavs have to figure out when it comes to the salary cap. There are also some things that they have to figure out when it comes to recouping assets. But we can't lose sight of the fact that the moves that Kobe Altman and this front office have made have gotten the Cavs to this point. Giving up those assets got them Donovan Mitchell. Getting Donovan Mitchell allowed them to reach the playoffs last year for the first time in 5 years. Getting Donovan Mitchell allowed them, during a stretch where a lot of teams around the NBA thought the Cavs were going to completely crumble, it allowed the Cavs to navigate the losses of Darius Garland and Evan Mobley and go on a surgical run because he was playing like an MVP candidate. So I get it. People are frustrated right now. The team has not played well in March. They're freaking 45-30. They're third place in the Eastern Conference. To this point, we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen in the first round of the playoffs. But these aren't the Brooklyn Nets, okay? These aren't the Toronto Raptors. These aren't the Atlanta Hawks. We don't have to talk about them as if they are. This isn't one of the most disappointing teams in the NBA. This is a team that probably shouldn't be in third place in the East, given everything that they've dealt with. So it feels like things are worse right now. It feels like things are bad right now. And I understand the question. I really, really do. Because we talked at the beginning of this season, and I wrote at the beginning of the season, if the Cavs do not make it out of the first round of the playoffs, significant changes are probably going to come to the organization. That could mean from a front office standpoint, that could mean from a roster standpoint, that could mean from a coaching standpoint, because they can't have a repeat of what happened last year against the Knicks, because this season was about taking the next step. This season was about learning from that loss against the Knicks and growing from that loss against the Knicks and evolving as an organization, evolving as a coach in terms of J.B. Bickerstaff, evolving as players in terms of Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, and Darius Garland. And if that doesn't happen, if the Cavs have the same result in the first round of the playoffs where they're not competitive, then it would be hard for Dan Gilbert to look at the situation and say, we are going in the right direction. We did take the step as an organization that we wanted to take. So to me, if changes are going to come at the end of the season, it's not going to be based on what just happened in March. It's not going to be based on what has happened through 75 regular season games. It's going to be about what happens in the first round of the playoffs. And I think there are reasons to believe if the Cavs are at full strength or close to full strength, that they can be competitive against one of these teams that they see in the first round. And I don't think it's time to all of a sudden write this team's obituary. It's too early for that.
Money is made in the playoffs and bills are paid in the playoffs, Chris. Things happen that are not expected, and Obviously, we see that in all types of games. It is a 7-game series. Anything can change. Anything can happen. And obviously, right now, we're still waiting for these standings to shake out. So there's a lot that can change over the last couple games of this season.
And I would twist the question around, and I would ask it this way, Ethan. And I'll ask it to you. At this point of the season, when we're having this conversation, have the Cavs failed to live up to expectations?
Have the Cavs failed to live up to expectations?
At this point.
I think we have said this time and time again. The expectations don't start until the first round of the playoffs.
I know that.
Obviously, we know that the Cavs won 51 games last year. And I don't think they were trying to get back to 51 wins. I think they're trying to get the 50 wins if they can. That's always nice. But to be really fair, Chris, I think they've exceeded expectations because of what they've had to go through this season. People who remember the Evan Mobley and Darius Garland breaking news on the same day, like an hour, maybe 30 minutes apart, X, formerly known as Twitter, was in shambles. There were people calling for JB Bickerstaff to be fired at that point. They were calling for Donovan Mitchell to be traded. There were teams coming and looking to see if Donovan Mitchell was on the trade market at this point. And yet, even though we do know that this was a very light schedule for the Cavs at this point of the season over these 6 weeks, they were able to pull out some wins that some teams didn't think they were going to get, too, along with the wins that they should have collected. So in my eyes, with everything that they've gone through this season, they have exceeded expectations. And I understand there are going to be some fans that don't agree with me because of what's going on right now. But I do want to remind you that recency bias is not good for the brain, because you can get into a mindset that everything else that's happened throughout the entire season does not matter because they lost to the Denver Nuggets by 29 points. But again, those same fans, if the Cavs go and beat Utah and then somehow beat the Phoenix Suns, Lakers, or Clippers, one of those three teams on that final stretch of the road trip, those teams that are in playoff contention, fighting for a play-in spot, could change their whole perspective if that recency bias is a thing. And we've tried to talk about this all season. That's not something we want. We want to evaluate the entire year and what has gone on behind the scenes, as well as what you guys have seen on the court.
And look at this, Ethan. Despite everything that they've gone through this year, with the injuries, with the chatter, with this terrible stretch that they've been on, just completing the month of March, like, despite that, they are top 10 in the NBA in net rating. They have a better net rating than the Phoenix Suns, the Dallas Mavericks, the Miami Heat, among others.
Those stats just show what this team has still been able to do with the adversity that they've been handed. But Chris, we got two more questions that I want to answer before we get out of here. The first one being, what was the point in Dan Gilbert saying that he thinks Donovan Mitchell will extend his contract? He had to have known that Donovan would be asked about his future and that it's in Donovan's best interest to deflect and remain non-committal. The timing of his interview seems odd given the Cavs' recent injuries. That question comes from Derek in South Bend, Indiana. And I want to say this. As much as Dan Gilbert knows that Donovan Mitchell has to deflect because of all the things going on and wanting to focus on the season, things like that, it's also Dan Gilbert's job to put confidence in his players, in the organization, and into the fans. There's a double-edged sword there. Dan Gilbert was also doing his job as much as Donovan Mitchell was doing his. I don't think the timing had anything to do with it. I mean, I think, Chris, you mentioned on an earlier podcast that it was just at a random event in Detroit and the question had to be asked. Like, you're going to get access to Dan Gilbert. You only get that so many times in a year. You have to ask pressing questions. So I think Dan Gilbert was just doing what anybody would have done in his position, is saying that the star player is going to come back, whether or not he's heard differently, because you don't want fans or anybody else to be freaking out, especially, like you said in this question, the timing of it. They're in a bad stretch. They got the end of the season, and then it's playoff time. So Donovan having to answer questions and do that stuff, that's part of his job too. And he has the opportunity to deflect or answer in any way that he wanted to. But obviously, both of these guys, Dan Gilbert and Donovan Mitchell, are focused right now on this season and whatever it takes to get that done.
Yeah, it's not as if Dan went over the top either in terms of his response. It's not like he sit there and he had this conversation with the Associated Press and he was like, there is no better place than Cleveland for Donovan Mitchell and he would be foolish not to re-sign this offseason. You know, maybe in past years, Dan Gilbert would have conducted that interview in a different kind of way and maybe he would have said some different things that might have rubbed his player the wrong way, that would have been very pro-Cleveland or pro-Cavs or something along those lines. He didn't. He just answered a question as honestly as possible. I don't think it was over the top. I don't think it crossed the line. I think it was just simply, yeah, we're confident that we're going to re-sign Donovan Mitchell this offseason. I don't think there's anything wrong with him saying that. If he's asked the question, is he supposed to say, No, we're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs, and then we're going to lose Donovan Mitchell in the offseason. It's going to be a terrible thing for the franchise. Or do you want him to say, on the record, no comment? Because that doesn't come across great either. So I think he said it the best way that he could, given the question that was asked to him, without being over the top or overly boastful. Or make it as if it was a response that Donovan was going to be angry about. You know what I mean? Like, he could have gone a bunch of different directions. And I think he took the most politically correct way that he possibly could without potentially ruffling any feathers.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, I think he instilled confidence in his guys and to his organization and gave an answer that not only uplifted fans, but probably made Donovan Mitchell understand that he was in his corner and wanted to have his back. But anyway, we are at the last question of today's podcast. Chris, we've made it. This one comes from Scott in Greensboro, North Carolina. He says, hey, Chris, this question may be a bit premature, but how will signing, if he does, Donovan Mitchell to a max deal affect the salary cap, the ability to resign Okoro or other free agents without going into the luxury tax? I know Dan Gilbert is not afraid to spend.
He's definitely not afraid to spend. And I think for the right team, he would be willing to make that financial investment and he would be willing to go into the luxury tax. It's got to be the right team and there's got to be success behind that particular decision, right? So if the Cavs flame out in the first round of the playoffs for a second straight year, then it's harder for Dan to justify increasing the payroll, going into the luxury tax, things along those lines. But look, there are always things that an organization can do to completely rejigger the roster, to balance the books a little bit better. And I just don't think that re-signing Donovan Mitchell, if he agrees to that long-term contract extension this offseason, would prevent the Cavs from making other moves around the margins. I don't think it would prevent the Cavs from re-signing Isaac Okoro. I don't think it would prevent the Cavs from keeping their quote-unquote core four in place if they determine, this is a big if they determine it's the right thing to do and it's the best thing for the organization to do. Just to speak in general terms, they could trade Caris LeVert. They could trade Max Strus. They could trade Isaac Okoro. They could trade George Niang, Dean Wade. Guys that this organization would deem quote-unquote expendable, if they do deem them to be quote-unquote expendable, those guys can always be moved in salary cap cutting situations. But I think one thing that does help this team moving forward, Ethan, is that Sam Merrill, somebody who is in their rotation, he's not in the every night rotation, not when this team is at full strength, but he's like on the borderline. He's right there as like the 10th, 11th guy in this rotation. Having him for $2 million on a team-friendly contract is beneficial when it comes to team building. Having Craig Porter Jr. on a team-friendly contract and this organization viewing him as a potential backup point guard of the future, that helps them balance the books. If Amani Bates evolves, if he matures, if his game continues to get better, if he develops on the court and off, having somebody like that in the organization that can give you minutes for cheap. That is something that can be a benefit. Dean Wade is better than a $6 million a year player, but that's what his contract is. So they have some high-priced guys, there's no doubt about it, but they also have some guys toward the end of their salary cap situation that play meaningful minutes, that have significant roles within this organization moving forward, that is all going to help out when it comes to any kind of financial decision-making going into the future.
All right, y'all. We have given you all the insight and answered a majority of the questions that were sent to us on subtext. So that will wrap up today's podcast. Chris, unless you have anything you want to add for the remainder of the show.
I do not. All good, man. All
right. And you guys know the rules. If Chris says we're done, then we are done. That'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But remember to subscribe to Subtext and become a Cavs Insider and interact with Chris and me. To do so, you can sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.